G'day, and welcome back to Convergently Speaking. Today in the third of our series on the Four Horsemen, Contempt. So I've talked so far about two out of the Four Horsemen, or the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which is a very dramatic full description. And so today we're up to the third one, which is contempt. Contempt, at least in my mind, is a bit of an outlier. It's a bit of a unique one out of the four. Sadly, not for the best reason. The Gottmans in their research actually have found that when contempt is present in a relationship, it's the number one predictor of divorce for that couple. So literally, as they've studied and they've looked at 65,000 couples, I learned a while back, and they've observed their body language, they've observed their speech patterns, they've observed their level of understanding of each other, all manner of metrics. The number one metric that they can track if they're wanting to determine where this couple's going to end up is contempt and the presence of contempt in the relationship. So what is contempt? One definition of contempt is attacking sense of self with an intent to insult or abuse. And so when I'm talking to couples about this, I always make the distinction that there's a difference between having a misunderstanding and in the process of that misunderstanding, hurting or wounding your partner, hurting their feelings, versus being in an argument or there being some kind of a tension or conflict and you intentionally and consciously trying to actually hurt that person. It's the classic example of bringing up something from the past that you know is a sore point and using that as a weapon. So rather than a misunderstanding when someone gets hurt, contempt is when someone gets hurt because of a conscious action on from someone else's side.
And in contrast to criticism, the definition of that is verbally attacking their personality or character. So you're still sort of going, it's still a low blow, you're still going after them. But once it's gotten into contempt, you're really attacking their whole sense of self and you're really trying to wound. I think with criticism, it's a little bit more inadvertent and it's a little bit more of a reactive thing. And contempt really shows an underlying sense of disrespect, an underlying lack of respect for the other person, an underlying pool of negativity towards that person, and it's coming out.
Yeah, and the other complicating factor with criticism is that sometimes what is taken as criticism is not meant as criticism, whereas the contempt, I think, is more willful. So if you criticize someone, they'll feel hurt. However, if there's a general lack of closeness and fondness and admiration between a couple, someone can actually be trying to say something productive or even just neutral, make a comment, and it gets interpreted as a criticism.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Caitlin, tell us a little more about what you've learned about contempt, because there's a few really interesting things that have come out of the Gottman research.
Mm-hmm. But as we've said, that it's the number one predictor of divorce. And there's some very concrete things that show that there's contempt in a relationship. So those things can be like mocking them, talking with sarcasm a lot, speaking in a condescending way, and also mean-spirited humor. Those jokes that you can tell from the outside even have a barb with them and are really not a joke. Calling people names, mimicking them, and then body language like eye rolling or sneering at them.
Yeah, the eye rolling is a classic sign of contempt.
And to go on from that, one interesting and confronting thing is that they found in their research that when there's a lot of contempt in a relationship, it actually affects the immune system of the people involved. In particular, I think the person who is sort of on the receiving end of that contempt, they'll have much higher instances of infectious diseases like colds and flu compared to people who don't have contempt in their relationship. And the metric that they used to measure that was actually just looking at the body language. So Gottman was saying, if you turn down the volume on the video and you can count how many contemptuous faces are made, so the eye rolling and the sneering, that is what they used to measure how high the contempt was in that relationship. And that correlated with the worse immune systems. You can see that once you've gotten to the point of contempt, it's both the relationship can be near to being doomed, and also it's really affecting the life and the quality of life for the people involved.
And in addition to that, when you're at that point, if you want to stay together and work on what needs to be worked on to achieve that, you've kind of got a double whammy. You've got to then deal with the thing that was always there, which was the issues, misunderstandings, difference in personalities, difference in values, difference in hopes and dreams, even differences in upbringings and the way in which you move through the world. But then you've also got this really acute sense of wounding, and I would suggest in pretty much every case, a lack of feeling appreciated by the partner, that you have to try and juggle simultaneously. So it's hard enough to move forward in changing your patterns, changing your habits, improving your ability to listen, to connect, to do all these things that we talk about, without having to have that really kind of open wound of remembering the contemptuous statements that were said to you last week, last month, last year. So there's a lot of healing that needs to happen, and depending on the level of wounding that's come from this contempt within the relationship will really determine whether anything else really is possible from a practical perspective while there's so much pain. And sometimes a situation is such that a couple will be separated. If the couple are wanting to work on things and get back together, being separated can actually create some space to find some healing and to almost start over and start courting again, dating again, going out for a meal or a coffee just for an hour, 2 hours, and build some trust without immediately going back into old patterns and then starting to wound each other and laying in more contemptuous blows to the other partner.
Mm. Yeah, what you have to do is something to break that cycle.
And just for clarity, I'm not suggesting that you go and get separated so that you can do this work. However, if you're constantly day in, day out wounding each other, then that's not a sustainable situation and not a healthy one, as we've just talked about, for your immune system. And of course, if there's kids, for the kids as well. What you're saying about breaking the cycle, Caitlin, I really like that quote from Esther Perel where she says, it takes two people to create a pattern, but it only takes one to break it. And, you know, I think the wisdom in that is understanding that if it always takes two to tango, then one person changes that dance. It by nature actually has a flow-on effect. Mm. It doesn't mean to say that all the responsibility can be taken by one person and things can be fixed and resolved, but certainly one person can refuse to keep dancing in that same dysfunctional way.
Mm.
So, Caitlin, what's the antidote to contempt?
The antidote is to build a culture of appreciation in your relationship, or maybe rebuild a culture of appreciation. So that can include really some short-term things and also some long-term things. It's a bit of a trickier antidote because I suppose you've gotten so far down the line of there's being so many negative feelings and negative things piled on top of each other. It's going to take more than a few little stops and a few little fixes to how you're interacting to fix that, because the contempt is coming out of just a whole lot of negative feelings that are under the surface.
Have probably been there for quite a long time.
Yes, yes. So in the short term, you can break that cycle by avoiding using you statements and using I statements. So that's a pretty classic suggestion with interpersonal things. You say, I feel this way when you do this. rather than using accusatory language. That can break that cycle of the criticism and the contempt. But as a larger fix and a longer term thing, a more holistic antidote is to build a culture of appreciation and to reignite some of that fondness and admiration that were probably in the relationship earlier on, but maybe now are lacking. So you really need to regain that fondness and admiration, work on that appreciation when there's contempt in the relationship, because that's showing that you've lost sight of the positives of the relationship. You've lost sight of the positives about your partner and you're really focusing on all the negatives. So let's share some practical things that can build that appreciation.
This is why I brought Caitlin as my co-host. She's the practical one.
I sure am. One thing that can really shift your mindset and help you to start looking for those positives and help you to not be focusing so much on the negatives and on the pain is having a practice of noticing things that you're grateful for, things that you appreciate about the relationship and about your partner. And so that can be maybe a journal that you do every day. Have a journal that you write down three things every day and try to find something different every day. And so early on, it might just be very, you know, oh, I'm glad he put petrol in my car, or little things. And then as you go on, hopefully you can be looking for, you'll have to look further and you hopefully will be able to be more aware of more things in the relationship. So it could be a journal, writing it down. If that doesn't work for you, even, you know, having habits that are linked to things you're already doing in your life can be really positive. So maybe every time you brush your teeth, you think of three things, or every time you are making coffee, something like that. Of course, that practice could be done with your partner as well, but that might be a bit more tricky. And especially if you're not getting along, that might feel a bit more intimidating and a bit more difficult. So to begin within yourself, that can be, yeah, I think that's a great place to start.
And on that vein, something that's just come to mind is when I have my new clients do an intake form. As you know, Caitlin, the last question I ask on there is, what's something that's going well in your relationship or your life right now? And I've put that there to help, you know, the participant that's filling out the questionnaire feel a bit of a positive emotion and start to explore that piece of their life and relationship. So it's there for their sake, but it's also there for my sake. For example, if I have people that are unable to write something positive, because I say relationship or life, if the relationship is such that it's making them feel that their whole life has nothing positive, then, you know, sadly, that's a pretty stark indicator that things are not good in the relationship. And then the other thing that I've found to be really useful is something I actually learned from my father-in-law, who we recently recorded a podcast with. He's actually a psychologist in the US, also working with couples. And he had a really good activity in that interview for working with couples that I've now incorporated in my work. So keep an eye out for that episode coming up in the near future. And this is really an activity that allows both parties to have some practical things that they can do to show their care and appreciation for their partner. But yeah, Steve expands on it in more detail, so keep an eye out for that episode.
One good example of where I chose to focus on things that I could appreciate about you, Dan, when in our relationship was probably early on when the kids were little, like when we had one or two babies. I would be very aware of all the practical tasks that needed to be done, of course, with young kids. You were working, I was at home, and you, Dan, being an intuitive, you're not as tuned into those practical tasks. And so I did and could spend most of my time focusing on all the things that I was doing that are very concrete, very sensory, all these things that have to be done and I'm doing them. I could choose to stew on all of that and get frustrated and not appreciate you and just focus on those negatives of what I wish you were doing. But I was able to, I think, and a big part of it was learning about Myers-Briggs and understanding how we were different. But I was able to start sort of trick my mind into stopping that cycle of focusing on the negatives and thinking through and noticing the things that you were doing. You take care of the finances really well, and I'm not that great with the money. And so, you know, realizing that was a thing that you were doing, I wasn't even aware of. And so I wasn't appreciating it because I just wasn't seeing it, you know. So thinking, oh gosh, I'm really glad that I don't have to do that. I'm really glad you're doing it well, keeping us afloat. And then lots of other things as well. But, and yeah, I think you always remember that because I'd mentioned that to you. And that was sort of, I suppose that was a bit of a touchstone. You know, I'd kind of go through all of, you know, this. Well, but I can be very grateful that I don't have to do the finances. So that has been really helpful for me to get out of that cycle and just have that emotion of appreciation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you're struggling with gratefulness because you're aware of all the things you're doing and all the things I'm not doing. And this was obviously I laugh because this is like the dynamic with pretty much every couple with kids that, you know, we give ourselves grace. We know all the things we're doing because we're in our own experience. And so we basically think, well, if there's stuff not done, and I know I'm doing my best, it must be that other person that I'm sharing a house with. And, you know, that's what I talk about a lot, is this need to assume each other is doing the best they can. But yeah, this example you gave is a bit of a touchstone because really before learning Gottman, you just intuitively work that out and you sort of would run this script in your mind. And you verbalized it to me as well, that you're grateful that I managed the money and that if it was up to you to do it, you know, we'd be in a worse financial position.
Yeah.
The reason it sort of played out this way is because the things that you contribute as a sensor and the person that was really maintaining the house is much more concrete and it's much more obvious. Now, I was obviously working and earning money, and so that is another concrete thing. But again, it's actually quite hard to put yourself in the other party's shoes. So for the income earner, it's hard for them to fully grasp and embody what it feels like to be at home with the kids every day. And, you know, I know I had moments where I had the kids and it would remind me again in a real visceral way, you know, this is years ago, what it feels like. And actually, when you started working a bit more sort of this year, maybe last year, I can't remember how you worded it, but commenting that you had some sort of appreciation now for the weight of that responsibility of income earning and what it is to be out of the house and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that being said, now, because I work a long weekend every fortnight and you're home with the kids, and I actually, you know, I can see from that side how easy it is to lose perspective. It's like, yeah, you're just doing fun stuff all weekend. You know, I'm not feeling that when I'm in it in a whole weekend with the kids on my own, it's a lot. But when I'm not doing it, I don't feel the same weight of it. Like I can see how it's so easy to lose sight of that and just think, well, I know I'm working hard. You're just off doing this other thing. It can be very easy to not value what the other person's doing. Or if you're the person home, kind of like, well, they get to leave every day. It's very hard to be outside of your own experience.
That's right. And I mean, it's just human nature to live in our own experience. And that's why I think this tool from Gottman's so useful, both the horseman, but then the antidotes, you know, knowing and being able to verbalize that the task, the need is to continue to nurture this culture of appreciation is really one of the most important things you can do for the health and longevity of your relationship, whether things are going well or not.
So another practical thing that can be helpful is thinking back, reminiscing on positive times. So maybe you do that together. Maybe even just looking through old photos of an old trip that you took or when your kids were small or whatever the positive time was and whatever can sort of get you in that state of mind. That can be a helpful thing to sort of just get out of your current situation. I know that can often be very powerful. Me, I'll go driving through where we used to live early on when we were together and, you know, all those emotions come back and, you know, there were positive and negative things associated with that. But part of that is just then reflecting on all of the life circumstances that we've been through since that time and realizing all that we've gotten through. And I can keep that larger perspective of wherever we are in this moment, there's been a larger story and we've overcome a lot of things and we've been through a lot of things. And it's not just about this positive or negative feeling that we have right now. That's often something you'll do with couples too, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. That was part of my learning from Gottman. They talk about getting a couple to tell their story and recount how they met and what attracted them to each other. And, you know, I think that's a lovely place to start. It gives me context again on the couple, but it has other value as couples that are in a place where the fondness and admiration has really been whittled away, and especially if there's a lot of contempt in the relationship. Even the way they remember their story can tend to focus on the negatives or the disagreements about what happened when and who did what and who said what. And on the flip side, you know, I'll often ask couples about this, and despite being there for counseling and clearly feeling they have some issues, out come the smiles and the grins and the laughing when they tell the story of how they met. And there's this sense of shared meaning and agreement about who they are as a couple and what their story is. So yeah, that's another good indicator of where the relationship's at, and specifically the level of contempt. Yeah, so I think that's the crux of contempt. What's going on at the core for someone when they're acting with contempt is they're nurturing a sense of disrespect and fundamentally a lack of empathy for their partner. Now, the reasons for this may be very understandable. Maybe trust has been broken in the past, or their partner has really hurt them, or a myriad of things. And whilst this may be all understandable, and I certainly can empathize with how a couple has ended up in this position, fundamentally, there's no moving forward from a position of criticism, defensiveness, and then ultimately having contempt as sort of the go-to. It's one thing to act defensive when someone says something to you. It's another thing to lash out and really attacking this person at a core level. So I suppose what I'm saying is another little red flag or another little sign that contempt is there and creeping up into the relationship is when one or both parties are feeling a lack of empathy and a lack of willingness or even a lack of ability to put themselves into their partner's shoes. So I reckon that's probably about it. Did you want to add anything, Caitlin?
Let's leave it there. And hopefully those practical tips can be helpful moving forward for people. And even if you're not currently in a state of contempt, it's good to be aware of how stewing on negative emotions can affect the relationship and how it can end up down the road.
All right, that's all for today. Talking about contempt, which is the third out of four horsemen of the apocalypse. Until next time, stay curious.